Welcome to Bard Hall this afternoon. My name is Laura Kuhn. I'm the Executive Director of the John James Trust here at the Bard College. We've been here since 2007. This convening today was a brainstorm of mine and David Rose, who will be our first speaker today. We wanted to do it in Katie's centennial year, which is 2012, and we just couldn't do it. There was just way too much going on in the world. But it never left us, so every year we would kind of get in touch with each other and say, what about now? And here we are, and the sort of irony this year is that our sort of keynote, if we were to have such a person, was going to be Gary Limbaugh, who agreed readily to be with us, and then left the year, pretty quickly thereafter. So we don't get to have Gary Limbaugh with us. What we do have, however, is Irene, Gary's widow, wife of decades. So she's with us today, and we can be gracious with a few words in a second. I don't want to talk too long. I want to just give you a lay of the land. You all have a program inside of your folders that are on your chairs that tells you, gives you the bios of the speakers. It also tells you generally what you're speaking about and the program note for each person. What else can I tell you? Lit by merit. So you heard three of our speakers, three out of five, this afternoon talk about the specimens that have been collected today. Britt is going to serve as MC. He's the most learned, probably, but also the most valuable. So he'll be the MC. They'll sort of keep things moving. We'll try to take a break in the middle of the afternoon just because the day is long. So, Britt, why don't you? Oh, but let me add a little reading time for the open attitude, sort of housekeeping. But the John Keach Trust is a Wave Farm Transmit partner, which means that today's presentations are being streamed online live at wavefarm.org/listen. And on the Wave Farm radio app with subsequent broadcast on WGXC 90.7 in the Upper Hudson Valley. Just want to let you all know, if you limit your swear words to none. Okay, so without further ado, Britt, come on up and say hello.
So I was really delighted when I got asked to come and be a part of this because it seemed like a really interesting event and certainly not anyone like I would normally be a part of when there's maybe a lot of lectures specifically about this group or that group of mushrooms or something. It's a really eclectic lineup, as you'll see. We have poets and writers and performers and people who work with John Cage and also mycologists. And without a doubt, I know the least about John Cage of any of the lineup of presenters, so I'm going to be learning a lot, so I was excited about that. And also just to come up here in this really beautiful area. And in any case, I publish a mycological journal, and I do a lot of lectures on mushrooms and mycology and stuff like that, and travel around a lot. So mushrooms often pull me away from my family or other things back home for lectures and things, but it's also really nice because mushrooms also bring me together with friends maybe I haven't seen in a long time, and inevitably we share hikes together like today, meet new friends, share meals together like we did last night, which was wonderful. So I think that's what's one of the most exciting things about mushrooms probably for everyone in this room. So John Cage, of course, was really inspired by mushrooms and took inspiration from mushrooms for poetry and music, and I think even reverse, probably thinking about music and poetry, got more in tune with what was going on in the mushroom world. David Rose will be the first speaker in 1 second. He had a really interesting article quite a few years back about ethnopoetics, somapoetics, which had to do with mushrooms and poetry, and even hearkened to George Kwasha. Oh, right in front. To George, that was when I first.
It's in here.
Yes.
It's in the folder.
Yes, it is in the folder, that's right. So it was really poignant, something that stuck with me. This has been years ago, and it really stuck with me. David was saying that how ethnomycology is, which is one of the like kind of splinter fields of mycology, is sort of studying people's uses of fungi for food and fiber and stuff like that all around the world and down through the ages, and how ethnomycology also, in learning about the different symbolisms and things that people have had of mushrooms, spiritualistically, or just a whole number of other reasons, like they may have used different mushroom symbols, sort of brought out poetry of those groups of peoples. And even more poignantly, David even said how, with all the frustration of renaming and changing the names of mushrooms that we have still going on to this day, in fact, I think it's even sped up, maybe we should just turn the a naming of mushrooms over to some of the poets, because if, as you tease out what the scientific name, we were talking about this yesterday at the dinner table meeting before, you tease out what some of the meaning of the mushroom names are, you know a bit about what the scientists who named them thought they looked like or were doing, or they're fairly poetic, some of the names, and so I'm all for turning over all of mycology to people like George, and that'd be a lot less frustrating, right? I'm not a taxonomist, so it doesn't keep me asleep at night, awake at night, but it is sort of bewildering trying to know all of the names. Okay, so in any case, I guess it's probably time to get started, unless I need to. Oh, I need to have Irene, I think, come up.
She would.
Where is Irene? Oh, so this is Irene Lieberman, and did you have something that you can say? So
I do. You are going to warn.
We all of us in the mushroom community were totally heartbroken when Gary Linkoff left us, and he was far and away the most influential mycologist of my lifetime. And we had a special foray in Chile that he was honored at. We did a special edition of Fungi Magazine, which I have copies up here, and at the end of the show stage, if you don't already have one, please take one on your way out. And we had a big memorial at Telluride for Gary. So this has been really sort of a jubilee year to celebrate Gary. And
okay, so I'm just going to talk about Gary and John Cage. Oh, gosh. Thank you. Okay. So in 1967, in Pittsburgh at Carnegie Mellon University, the art students walked around with Marshall McLuhan in their pockets, trying to understand media, and greeted each other saying, "Did you hear the latest thing that Cage said?" And I met Gary Linkoff on April Fool's Day of that year. And the next year, I packed up my library at DeSalle and Constructivist Books and Silence by John Cage and the New York Times cookbook. And we headed to New York City, renting a garden apartment on the Upper West Side for $90 a month. And we went out every evening to film and theater, concerts, modern dance, and political events in the back of the Village Voice. As a few of you may recall, it was called New York City, $2.50 and under. Gary had previously spent a year in law school and several graduate school years at the University of Pittsburgh in Greek studies and English lit. And he came to New York City to write and began a book about a young person resisting the draft and living in Central Park off the land. As Cage famously said, all great art is a form of complaint. We went to every Merce Cunningham dance and saw the opening of Canfield, where it was silent at Brooklyn Academy. Clive Barnes wrote in the New York Times at that point, "When Canfield had its premiere at the Brooklyn Academy of Music in 1969, there was some kind of electrician strike, and the work had to be danced to silence. It has never looked so good." Because his dance has no connection to the music, other than an emotional attraction, it has very little inner life, which is why it bores people and why some of them get up and leave. He should probably start listening to music and even choreographing to it. But we had come from Pittsburgh and the wonderful William Steinberg, so we were brought up on Edgar Perez and Stockhausen, and our ears were in excellent condition. We bought the rest of the books by John Cage, but no matter how hard we tried, we still couldn't find the New York Mycological Society. This is pre-internet. So one day, Gary, who had by now become more interested in the edible plants in Central Park. He had learned them all in the other city parks, walked up to the New York Botanical Gardens and said, I can teach here, weeds, edible or otherwise. And very soon after, he found out about the Torrey Botanical Club. And one day, we went out with them, and Gary brought a plastic bag of mushrooms from Riverside Park. He was so embarrassed that it had turned to brown liquid. The regulars there said, come back tomorrow where the real action is, the New York Mikeys. We decided they really knew their stuff because they could identify brown liquid. And we said we wouldn't eat anything we collected, of course, but then we ended up cooking and eating 9 species. And the club was led by Guy Nearing, the brother of Scott Nearing, who wrote many books that we were loving, that we admired, including Living a Good Life. And Guy was a poet and had written the authoritative book on lichen that was out at the time. He was also a musician until the raccoons in his house chewed up the legs of his piano under his glass. Decades later, you probably, if you're familiar with Gary's books, you know that Gary did go on mushroom hunts with John Cage. And one of Gary's books recounts how in Telluride, John had picked purple cornarius and was going to take them home to his guests. And Gary offered to trade his chanterelles, imagining the headlines of famous musicians and painters that were going to get sick. But John would have none of that. He saw right through it. And it turned out they all woke up the next morning to the very life they were living. Our intention is to affirm this life, to simply wake up to the very life we're living, which is so excellent, once one gets one's mind and one's desires out of its way and lets it act of its own accord. That's true.